Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country. And there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. It's Wednesday. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim Dennis has the time off. He's still getting better, getting healthier, recouping. Please keep him in your thoughts and prayers. He's listening, so we appreciate that. I want to address something about yesterday's show with Tobias Churton. I've really just had this going through my mind since I spoke with him, and I thought it was important to kind of chat with you about. If you missed yesterday's show and looked at the title or the explanation and thought maybe this wasn't for you, it probably is more for you than you know. I think there's a lot of really important power to the words that were spoken yesterday in the show, and the idea that there is this magic, this kind of interesting principle all around us at all times. And I can tell you from personal experience, I'm never happier or in a better place than when I'm being creative, when I'm tapping into something and opening it up. Whether it's the ideas behind what we're going to do on the show, my writing, spending time with the kids, creating different things. It just, that is the genesis of happiness. And I think that a lot of us shut ourselves off to that and we forget and we get into this awkward realm where we don't know where we fit in, what we are supposed to do, where we're supposed to be, but we've forgotten the most important and creative aspect is opening ourselves up. Allowing your imagination to have control for a bit. Not where you're going down flights of fancy, but, and there's time for that too, but where you're creating. So I encourage you, sit down and write. Many of you have had thoughts and things that you want to get out. Share them. Expand your horizons. Get outside of the comfort zone of your world. And instead of wallowing in self-pity and in darkness that we have self-imposed on ourselves, it's important for you to move beyond that. And I worry because I get so many letters and I see so many postings on social media of people in these dark places and their lives are so disconnected. And I think it's easy. I think we can reconnect. And I don't think there's a whole lot that goes into it. I think it's getting that will up to do it and putting the connection back together and getting yourself back. And once you start to do that, I think you'll see that there are changes in your lives that will be forthcoming. That's enough of my pulpit today. I'll get off of the soapbox. I just, thinking about what we talked about yesterday really kind of helped to re-inspire me and open up a new chapter, I think, in my life. So I want to make sure that for those of you listening that share your day with us, that maybe you're in a dark place right now. Maybe you're just coming out of one or just heading into one. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And sometimes going into the dark is not a bad thing. That's how we learn who we really are. But realize that that's not who defines us. Coming out is what defines us. Educating yourself, enlightening yourself, and allowing yourself to enjoy life and put yourself back in that creative fold, I think will change who you are fundamentally for the better. And for those, all of those people that you love around you. Let's get started in today's show. This is a topic I'm fascinated with, and joining me, Joyce Keller. She is an internationally known visionary, author, television and radio host, media personality, and she's the author of 6 best-selling books, which are sold internationally, including England, Greece, Italy, Africa, China, and many other countries. Joyce has been a columnist for Lifetime Television and is a certified hypnotherapist who has safely and successfully led thousands of people to overcome weight problems and many other human difficulties. She's here to talk to us about an upcoming book, a topic that really grabbed my imagination and attention, Bridging the Gap, What Happens Before, During, and After Death. Thank you for joining me, Joyce. It's great to speak with you again.
Hey, Dave, thank you. And we're not talking about the gap between teeth, right? We're talking about the gap between...
Well, you're the one that wrote the book. I'm going to let you define what the gap is. Either way, we've got to bridge those gaps. So what made you decide this was the time to write a book like this?
Well, you know what? I've been doing readings for my whole life. And I know what people are thinking and feeling, and I know you do too. But the thing is, people are so afraid of death. And I deal a lot with people who are dead and dying or close to it or crossing over or convalescing. And, you know, they don't have a lot of time left. And in some cases, they're able to really tune in and get that information they need themselves from their own spiritual guidance and their higher intuition. But in many cases, that doesn't happen. Either the person is on drugs in a hospice or a hospital somewhere, or they're just not interested, they're not tuning in. Comas are terrific, by the way, because those people are more out of body than in body. So they learn a lot about what's really going on, and they don't have any fear of death at all. And Dave, the people who have had near-death experiences, as I have, do not fear death at all. You say, this is terrific. So it's not the word death should really be eliminated from the English language. I mean, death, like you don't want to go there. But if you say, use a different euphemism, you say, well, we're going to cross over or we're going to leave our physical body behind, give it a different name. I think it would be a good step in the right direction. So that's basically what I do. I share my knowledge and my experiences with people who are in that transition and need to know more. Was that your question? Something like that. You know, what's bridging the gap?
Right.
The gap is...
What is the gap? I mean, you say using the term death and you know, maybe we need to change that, but isn't that in effect what it is? It's the end, the death of the physical form, and, you know, we can't get to the next level without that death, without that part of us that finally gives in.
Right, but the word death now has some pretty negative connotations.
So well, understandably, yeah. It means I'm not here with my cool stuff anymore, yeah.
You know, I grew up in a large part of my life when I was growing up dealt with death because my parents, we all lived in Brooklyn, and my parents loved to go to all the Brooklyn cemeteries and put flowers on all the graves of the folks that they had lost. So I spent a lot of my childhood driving around Brooklyn cemeteries and being introduced to death at an early age. And I remember being about 5 years old in the back of my mother's grandfather's car and standing up, of course, there were no seat belts or anything like that, and passing mausoleums in the cemetery. And my parents looked at each other and they said, you know, we should buy one of those because, it's, you know, my father had money at that time. So I said, in the back seat of the car, I just started crying because I looked around. I didn't see any puppies. I didn't see any ice cream trucks. You know, it was a cemetery. So I was crying. My mother said, what's wrong? And I said, I don't want to live here. I don't want to live in one of those little houses. Well, my parents laughed so hard. They both wet their pants, I'm sure. So my mother said, no, a mausoleum is for, she didn't quite know how to tell me, but she started explaining death to me at that time because she was a very good medium also, by the way. So I was introduced to death at an early age, and the gap that we spoke about is the gap between the physical life that we're experiencing now and the crossing over where we go into a higher dimension. Did I lose you, Dave?
No, I'm here. I'm just listening to you.
Okay. Okay, because you know what? It was beeping, and I don't know what that means. But when I hear beeping, it's not good.
I don't know. I didn't hear any beeping. That's got me unnerved. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, because my wire to my cell phone is plugged in to make sure I don't lose you.
Oh, all right.
Excuse me. So the gap is between the physical and the non-physical, that crossing over stage. I'm not a big Shirley MacLaine fan, but years and years ago, she wrote about the hereafter. She wrote a lot of books about that. And she was one of the pioneers of our time. Believe it or not, it was Shirley MacLaine. And she wrote about the silver cord that connects. They actually showed this on television, that connects the physical to the non-physical. And I think the determining factor of what death really is and what that gap really is when that silver cord, or the Hindus called it the Antahkarana, when that breaks or is severed, that's the real moment of death. But doctors have a real problem because it's very, you know, it's an invisible factor. So it's very hard to determine what death is. You know, right. It's very hard to measure. So that gap is kind of wide, and it's becoming wider as technology improves. So it's anyone's guess about what real death is, of what can be determined. And so that's basically what I write about, because I've had near-death experiences, and I know about coming back and going forth and going into the light and all of that. But once the silver cord breaks, it connects us to the cosmos or God or whatever you wish to call it, that's the real end. And you don't go into the tunnel of light that you spoke about before. You were talking about coming out of the tunnel, which I thought was very brilliant of you, because the tunnel is really so significant. And people go through it usually at a very, very fast pace. And it's very rare that anyone would come back after that death experience. So there are a number of determining factors that are the gap. And I wanted people to bridge that gap and to cross over without fear. And I do so much work with people who are afraid. And I just hold their hand. I say, you don't have any reason to be afraid, because it's really a glorious experience. And for the 8 million people who have reported near-death experiences, they all say the same thing. Occasionally, you know, God will take you to a lower dimension and show you some pretty bad things, and these are things we want to avoid. And they'll usually bring us back into the body and say, you know, you're going to have a different life now. You're not going to be whatever you were before. And those lives are very transformational also, the ones who get to see the lower zones. And there are lower zones. I mean, do you agree with that, Dave, that it's the light and the dark?
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, the yin to a yang, I'm sure exists. You've got both sides of that. You know, what happens after death? That's still conjecture to me. You know, I mean, I haven't been there, and I'm in no hurry to get there, so I don't know for sure.
No, you have a long life. I mean, God bless you. You're doing great, and you're really contributing so much. But I think the most informative source, believe it or not, is the web, where you go to. Just put in near-death experiences and what these people are reporting. And they're glorious. And when they think about it, they start crying. They say, this is so beautiful. You know, I felt the warm embrace of our Creator, who said, you have nothing to worry about. You're here and you're fine, but it's not your time to stay here. And they usually send them back. So there are just hundreds and hundreds of these near-death experiences reported on the web. And I think that's the greatest source of information and comfort. You say, oh no, dead is dead, and you know, you go in the box. And I love, oh gosh, you know, this is so awful of me to say, but people who think that when you die, you go into the grave and you're finished and that's it. Well, you don't go into the grave. And, you know, if you go to a cemetery and you pay your respects, that's really nice. You give me flowers, say a prayer. But the person has to be drawn back to their body and to this decaying body in the grave. And it's not pleasant for them. It's not pleasant for them to see you crying or sad at the gravesite. So what about people who are cremated? You know, it's like they can't possibly. That's the greatest proof that you're not in the grave after we die, the fact that we can be cremated and scattered. And my husband passed away about 2 years ago. And what's so funny is because he was so involved with metaphysics with me, he was my radio co-host and my co-author, my co-everything, and we created beautiful children together. And so when he crossed over, he died in under a minute. And it was very, of course, it was terrible. But he came back immediately, and he started communicating with me while the coroner was in my home and making arrangements. Jack is standing there saying, well, why are you all so upset? Don't I look good? And, of course, no one could see him. But I could tell that he was doing extremely well, And he started communicating immediately because he was so enmeshed in these teachings. So he has been communicating almost on a daily basis with me and telling me that it's terrific. And one thing I noticed, Dave, is that he doesn't have the concerns that I have, like bills, paying bills. He doesn't concern himself with that anymore.
Right.
Excuse me. He's not involved too much with the mundane and the pragmatic cares that we all have here. So I just have so much to say about it. He's been teaching me a lot and sharing a lot with me. And I think that it's an incredible experience to have this communication.
Did he explain to you what it's like to go through the actual moment of death? What is that like for the soul?
Yes, and this is hilarious. It's not really a funny subject, but the way because I'm so involved with this myself, what happened was, okay, I'll just explain it. This is very interesting. I think it's very interesting. We went to bed, and we were getting ready to go to sleep, but it was a very, very cold night. It was February 6th of 2015, very, very cold in New York. And we had gone out with the dog, and we came back in. He said, you know, honey, I'm really, really cold. I'm very cold. And I said, well, I'll go get the Vicks. I'll rub your chest. Okay. So I come back in 2 seconds with Vicks, and I'm rubbing his chest. I said, is that better? And he didn't answer me. And he had already started the death process. So I started doing chest compressions and breathing. You know, I said, don't fool around like this. Stop fooling around. And I called 911 at the same time. And they said, pull him onto the floor so we can help him more easily, get him onto the floor. Well, that wasn't easy. I said, okay, I'm holding the phone with one hand. The other hand, I'm pulling the 6 foot tall guy onto the floor, who's now a dead weight, by the way. And as I'm pulling him onto the floor from the bed, he comes back in his body and he says to me, what are you doing? I said, I'm pulling you onto the floor. They told me to pull you. And that was the last thing he said to me. He was gone. And by the time they got here, about a minute later, there was just no bringing him back. So he left quickly, but he complained because I was pulling him onto the floor. So he has been teaching me a lot and sharing a lot and rejoining with so many pets and friends and relatives. So it's a happy time for him, but sad on this side of the veil.
Do they feel anything when there's that moment of disconnect, when the physical form and the soul separate like that?
Yeah, I think it's joy. It's a feeling of great joy. It's leaving the body behind, and it's just glorious. Does everyone have the same experience? No. It's different for everyone in keeping with your belief system, I believe. But it's primarily the same. You're leaving behind a body that you no longer need. It's just a temporary encasement for 90 to 100 years, whatever you get. And it decays quickly. There's this transitional state that occurs very quickly. I was privileged to have also seen my dad leave, and he passed away in a hospital a number of years ago. But when he left his body, he waved to me because I was standing next to him. He waved, and then there was this tremendous, what looked like a big puff of cigarette smoke that came out from his solar plexus and went directly into the ceiling. And it's just like this huge puff of cigarette smoke that lasted like 2 seconds, and he was gone. And I turned to the people who were with me in the hospital room. I said, did you see that? They said, yeah, we see that all the time. You see that all the time. I think some people leave through the head. Some people leave through the feet. I don't know, but I saw it with the solar plexus being the release time. So I've been privileged to see and know so much that my message for your audience today, Dave, is don't be afraid and know that God is good. So that's basically what my mission is about right at this time. So do you have feelings? I'm sorry, Dave.
See, I think, you know, I mean, death, I think the concept of it and the idea is so terrifying to people because even though we speak, and, you know, we've been doing the show for 12 years in one form or another, and we've spoken to mediums, and we've spoken to near-death experiencers, and we've spoken to people that have beliefs on different sides of the religious spectrum. But yet it still, no matter how much you hear about it, it doesn't comfort you because it still feels like theory?
Okay, the thing that's the most comforting is an actual near-death experience. Or actually...
Well, I think that that depends on it, too, because, you know, I mean, I've had near-death experiences, and I've never seen the tunnel of light. I've never heard friends or relatives come for me. There was nothing. It doesn't mean I was in a dark tunnel or boiling in hell. It just means that I had no experience the two times that they lost me. And that is frightening to me, and I've heard from countless listeners around the world that have had similar situations, and they're like, yeah, the idea of near-death comforts me until I had my own and nothing occurred.
Okay. To that, I would say it's different for everyone. And also, you probably did not, you had a near-death experience, unquestionably, at least one, but you didn't go completely into the clear light, or you didn't go completely into the transitional stage where you were clinically dead. I mean, there are two stages of death. The first is a clinical death, which takes 4 to 6 minutes. And that's when your breathing stops, and your heart stops beating. That's the first stage. You have to go through that to actually go into the death experience. And I think near-death experiences don't go that far. It would be too hard to bring us back. And then you have the biological death, which actually is when the cells begin to decompose and the body's organs shut down completely. I mean, this is real death. So... I don't know how far you went into it. How far did your near-death experience take you?
It was just moments that I was gone, but, you know, a couple of minutes in one case, and you know, I don't remember the other time. But, you know, it's still – I've talked to people that were gone for 2 to 3 minutes, and they lived an eternity in heaven or, you know, in the light. They had, you know, full-on conversations with who they believed to be Jesus or God or relatives in that same span. But I, you know – there are many listeners like myself that just never had that experience. And the idea that we're not here, you know, I mean, it's all rainbows and kittens and unicorn rides when you hear about heaven and the idea of what happens next and, oh, it'll be good. But the concept of death, finality just scares us, period, right? I mean, look at how people react to the end of a TV show, right? And
well,
there's
course,
a final
of
episode
course.
Of a series. It's saying goodbye, and it's devastating because it's part of your normal is no longer normal. And
that's right.
And that's what, you know, this part of what jumped out at me about your title, and I'm sure my listeners are getting sick of hearing about it, is, you know, I lost my mom.
When did she cross over?
In November. And
November, okay.
You have these connections, and death separates you from these connections for most of us. And we don't feel necessarily the connection anymore. Certainly not in the way that it was in life. And then the idea that death can, you know, that death goes, I've had a concept of it as my mom did for, you know, my entire life, and even more so in the last 12 years of doing this radio show. But when it actually, you're confronted with death, and I've been lucky in my life, I've only lost a few people that I was connected to and that, you know, that there was an impact. But I was younger and it was easier to deal with. And, you know, when you start getting to, I'm 50 years old this November, and you start facing your own mortality and you start realizing that it's closer to those points than you've ever been before. And the news is filled with impending doom and war and suicide bombers and nobody's safe anywhere. It starts to weigh on you and it starts to bog you down. And then the fear and reality of death is so there all the time.
Yes. That's true.
It's hard to heal and move on. And I think, you know, when I saw the title of the book and the idea that, you know, what is bridging that gap? And, you know, how do we make this connection? Because I know I'm not alone. There are many listeners out there that just feel this disconnect with life and that when they suffer a massive loss, it's hard to move on because, A, their mind is still in that moment of death. And I don't think I've ever surrendered that since watching my mom pass away. As much as I was glad I was there for her, it's been torture since because I cannot get past that moment. And I think a lot of people are in that same situation. And the finality when you're faced with it is devastating.
Yes, but it's happy for them. There's no way to prove it, but it really is true. I think, just to go back just briefly before what you said, which was so significant and so touching, the determining factors about what death actually is has a lot to do with the releasing of what's called the death hormone, which we have at the moment of birth. We have that throughout our life. And once that's released, I think there's no coming back from that either. So there are a number of factors that are somewhat esoteric, but really true. And with regard to your mother and to folks who want that communication and who need that proof, I would say in some cases it has to do with our vibration not being able to pick up their vibration, or they might be sleeping. They could sleep for 100 years. It's like there's no time. So there's just that long sleeping time on the other side, whereas here we know it's 100 years or however long it might be. And they have schools, and there is so much to be done, and so many training experiences, and so much work in the non-physical.
Maybe
also, you could say, well,
maybe that's part of why people fear death too. Is, geez, you know, when I get done here, I want to be released from all this flap. You know, I don't want to go to school again. I don't want to face the reality of what I've done when I died or when I was living. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to face a life review. I think that's, again, many of it is, it's, you know, ego and your own self-concern and preservation that, listen, you know, I think if we all knew at the moment of death, angels came and brought us and there were McRib sandwiches and Twinkies and you never gained weight and you had a full head of hair and you could ride ponies and whatever you wanted to do, that people would be a lot more comfortable with the concept of death, even though they know they're leaving behind loved ones. It's that, but it's in the really not knowing. And what I find disconcerting myself, and I've heard from many of the listeners, is the fact that the whole concept that what we create is our own heaven or hell experience, and that each religion has their own version of it. I mean, do you understand from the outside? I know it's hard because you're connected and you're a medium and you've got this ability. But do you understand from the outside, from people that are disconnected, what a bunch of mumbo jumbo that comes off as, and rhetoric, and just something to try to comfort the mind for those of us that aren't there? It's really painfully hard to get past that belief that there's, you know, whatever we've created or believe will happen will be what happens. How do we get past that?
Well, there are some wonderful ways. And about 20 years ago, a terrific Meryl Streep movie came out called Defending Your Life. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Right,
day.
With Albert Did Brooks. Yeah, I love that movie, yeah.
Right. That tells you everything you need to know. Meryl Streep was sitting at a counter eating spaghetti and ice cream. She said, I couldn't do this, you know, in the physical life, but this is great. And she didn't even care about the children she left behind. It's like they're in a very happy place. You mentioned something about it's all, what did you say, sweet things? I forget, I don't want to misquote you, but you said a lot of people who have these experiences say that it's all glorious and terrific. I think it's called heaven for a reason, because it's heavenly, and it doesn't last forever. It only lasts as long as the spirit needs it. And then you would go on, and I know that people don't want to rush back to school either, but, you know, at a certain point, maybe they feel that they would be enriched by some sort of learning experience. My husband recently, I have to cough, Dave, excuse me. I don't have a cough button, as you probably have, but my husband told me that he was involved. He was an engineer, so he told me that he was involved in higher teachings and that Einstein was his friend. Somebody has, he's hanging out with Einstein.
Name dropper. Right.
What a name dropper. Right. You know, and he's having really a terrific time. Is it all good? I don't know. I only can tell you what I'm hearing and what I'm learning. Are there downtimes where a guide will say, yeah, we need to go to hell for a couple of days here. You know, you need to know more about what's really going on and go to the lower zones as well. Dave, I can only tell you that the only way people will have a degree of understanding or openness is to actually have a near-death experience themselves. And you can say, well, I had it, as you did, and I didn't hear anything, I didn't see anything, it was all dark, and I came back, blah, blah. Well, to that I would say you probably didn't go far enough into the light. They were afraid that you really would physically die, and you have so much good work to do here, Dave. We can't lose you. So we want to keep you for many, many, many years. So it could be that there are two problems, which I just mentioned. They didn't want to take you too far out. You know, like with anesthesia, you can't go too far out because if you do, you don't come back. It's like that. And you have a lot of work to do. So, and the people who say, well, you know, I was so close to my mother or my sister, and they crossed over, I haven't heard from them, those folks are probably sleeping or the vibration is not right for connection. If you went to a medium, most of them are not that good, I have to tell you. If you went to a medium who has a good track record and who can reliably link you up, and these are usually people no one has ever heard of, they're in a back room someplace, and you have that communication, and you know it's real, and you can feel it in your heart and soul, and you say, this is really real. It's a beautiful thing, and it's so healing and restorative and regenerative. It's like, couldn't be better. So I know that you would like communication with your mother, and you haven't had it. Did she die around your birthday?
Yeah.
Okay.
And see, I don't want it. It's, and I'm not looking for connection right now. I'm just, you know, as we're talking about this and discussing it, maybe you could tell us this for facing death, I guess, is part of it too. How do we begin to face death? What are some of the important principles we should understand so that we can wrap our head around it and start to come to peace with it?
The best thing you can do is go to the web. If you have a computer, if you don't have a computer, get one, because it will be life-changing and transformational as far as fears or concerns. And put in near-death experiences. Put in NDE. Put in anything like that. There are so many people, like Daniel Brinkley has been electrocuted by lightning quite a number of times, and he's phenomenal. He was one of the first people to actually come out and talk about this. He had the courage to speak about it. And to say that this death is not death. There is no death. It's just a separation. And it's like going from one room to the other, which doesn't help anyone unless you have that healing experience yourself. You say, you know, why can't I do it? Well, why don't you either spend more time in meditation or learn how to tune up your consciousness so you can be more receptive? Just sit quietly and say, Mom, I'd really like to hear from you. I don't want to go to a medium. I don't want
right,
to.
I'm not talking about I'm not talking about the communication aspect. I mean, let's talk about the different, you know, parts of death. There's coming into death, and the acceptance of death. Is there something that we should do that will get us to the point where we, you know, can start to accept death or get an understanding of it? I mean, are there any principles or exercises that you would recommend for people to do to come to, come to an end with that?
Okay. Number one is what I just touched on before, getting a computer, get a cheap laptop and go to the web where it has NDEs, and you will see the most incredible revelations of what we can expect. These people, you can see the sincerity. I'm going to say almost all of them. They have had this experience. They've gone through it. They've touched real death, and they've come back, and they're sharing their stories. Some of them are horrendous. They're not all great. They're not all moonlight and roses. But for the most part, they are. They say, Jesus hugged me. And I said, no, don't make it stop. Don't let it stop. Keep hugging me, God. Keep hugging me. And they usually say it's time to go back. So that's the first way. If people want that revelation and they want that healing about death, go to the web and start reading about near-death experiences. There are hundreds of them, and they're very, very touching. The second thing is meditate and pray. Ask for the highest information to come through, the most healing information, and experience. You want that experience of connection. You want to be able to see your mother again. And you don't want it to be frightening. You want it to be in the best, easiest way. And the best way for us to make spirit communication, at least initially, is in our dream state. Come to me in a dream. You say, oh, you know, I had a dream about my mother. Well, no, how do you know it was a dream? Maybe it was really communication, that she was actually speaking with you and connecting with you. Analyze your dreams. Listen to your dreams. Keep a notebook or a tape recorder by your bed. Write down what you're hearing and seeing, and it will get better and better and better over a period of time. Even if you feel there's nothing, it will change and it will improve. So the first thing is go to the web, near-death experiences, and you're going to be blown away. They're just incredible. Second thing is record your dreams. Listen to those dreams and say, was that really a message? What was that? And in most cases, it's hard to understand, especially in the beginning. You need to learn about universal symbology. And if you see water or whatever it is, again, go to the web and say, you know, go on to dream analysis and find out what these dreams actually mean. Most dreams are offered to us from spirit in universal symbology. And you have to figure out what that actually is. I mean, Dave, have you had any good dreams lately? Have you had any dreams of your mother?
Nothing that I would put down as like a true visitation dream, you know, maybe flitting about in the background of a regular dream, but nothing. You know, I've had a dream visitation with my grandfather. That was something surreal and detailed, but not in the case with my mom.
Well, that's terrific. Well, maybe your mom is in training, or she doesn't quite have the ability. It's only since last November. It's only a few months. So, you know, if she's learning the process of how to communicate with you, it might take quite a long time. My feeling is that she's doing her best, but she's not quite there yet. But with your grandfather, he's on it. And what, you know, does he give you good messages? Like, what is he actually doing when he speaks with you?
You know, it was one time shortly after he passed away that he came to me, gave me some messages, and that was about it. You know, I'm of the mind, I try not to call on my loved ones because I kind of feel like, well, if they've done their part here and we had a good relationship here and it was all done, I don't want to be the one to keep bothering them while they're over there. I want them to go do what they need to do next.
I understand perfectly. I have to tell you something that was so bizarre and so upsetting to me that I have to share it. Okay, Dave? I mentioned Jack was an engineer, and he also had millions of engineering books. And I'm in the process of selling my apartment, so I've been selling my hundreds and thousands of books and his hundreds of, you know, it's like we're drowning in a sea of books. So, and I've been donating them to the library, anybody else who would take them. But Jack's books were really big and very, very heavy because he had taken tests to become a licensed engineer. So he had these really humongous books. And I called Stevens University, which is for engineers, and I said, please, let me bring my books to you. I have these. They said, we don't want them because everything is on computer. And our library is filled to capacity. I could not get rid of these books. So I did the unthinkable. I brought them out to my area where there's an incinerator, and I just left them there in the garage, and I put a note on them saying, please take these books. Someone take these books. But I didn't know what to do with them. So, okay, so a number of weeks pass, and Jack was communicating yesterday, and he said, why didn't you go to the library? And where are my books? What happened to my books? He's talking about his books. Apparently, either he didn't know what I had done with them, or he didn't like what I did with them, which gave me tremendous guilt, and I felt really terrible. And if I had been able to go and get them and bring them back, I would have, but I couldn't. They were gone. But spirit holds on to some of the things that they love, and they kind of expect you to honor what they did while they were here. And I have to say, I did something quite dishonorable in doing that. But honestly, Dave, you know, I, being the human that I am and the problems that I have with everyone else has, you wonder, what could I have done that would have been better? But I can't say he was distressed, but it was more like gentle chiding. Like, you know, so the spirit does have a certain degree of awareness of what we do. I feel that your mother is getting ready to communicate with you. It's just going to take a little more time. And plus, you may have to have more tuning up also. A little tweaking here and there, and you'll be able to do that as the vibrations come together. Yours and your mother's have to be compatible. And everything changes once they go. I also have to tell you something else, Dave, that my mother did after she crossed over. Okay, can I tell you another anecdote?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. My mother never walked. She was physically handicapped. She had braces, a wheelchair, crutches, the whole thing. And when she eventually crossed over in her 70s, she came to me the first night she crossed over. And she said, look what I can do now. And she threw away her crutches. This is a dream. She threw away her crutches. She said, watch this. And she ran over a hill, and she ran back. And she said, it's so wonderful to be able to run and to be free of the problems that I had. And she just was having a wonderful time running around. She was, you know, I had never seen my mother run or walk or anything. So she ran over a hill. And then she was gone. And I haven't heard from her. Like 12 years passed before I heard from her again, a long period of time. So there's so much we don't understand, a lot that we're starting to understand through the near-death experiences that people are having. And they're, for the most part, they're loving and they're kind and they're funny and they're wonderful. And if I could give a bit of advice to people, which, you know, people don't want to hear, stop hanging out in cemeteries. Stop grieving. If you can possibly bring yourself to the point where you stop grieving. I work a lot with people who are grieving and who are sad and who need healing of the spirit. And you go to the cemeteries once in a while, leave flowers, that's fine. But don't have that heavy grief. The grief and the crying is bad. And spirit will come back and say, please stop crying. You're making me crazy. I'm trying to be happy here, and your crying is pulling me down. You don't have to have that kind of tribute to me. I know you love me, but please be happy. Be happy on the earth. Go on with your life. In my book, Seven Steps to Heaven, I wrote two poems which came directly from spirit, and they're both about healing the spirit and letting go and moving on. And stop holding on to grief. Move on.
It's a lot easier said than done, unfortunately. We have to take a break. We're up against a break time. We'll come back. We've got more. Joyce Keller, our guest, Bridging the Gap, What Happens Before, During, and After Death. We'll talk about that when we return to Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is Beyond the Darkness, your home for the best in paranormal talk radio, 5 days a week. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim Dennis is still off. Again, please keep him in your thoughts and prayers. Our guest today, Joyce Keller, we're talking about an upcoming book, Bridging the Gap, What Happens Before, During, and After Death. I know in the last segment you were saying we have to get over grief. How does one do that? I mean, that's such an ingrained part of us. In the you know, it's easy to say, let's just move on. Let's just let it go. You know, they're in a better place. But let's face it, we're not really grieving for them. We are grieving for ourselves for the loss of them. How do we get over the feeling of loss for ourselves?
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's really brilliant. One of the most difficult things for us as humans is when we lose a child, God forbid, or a baby. And you can't really heal too well from that. That's really difficult. Any loved one. But I think the greatest healing comes, again, either in dreams or if you say, please come to me. Usually if you ask, now you said before, Dave, that you don't want to ask. Now, somewhere in the Bible it tells you don't call on spirits, or, you know, don't bring them down to our level. They're usually at a higher dimensional plane. So you're probably not supposed to call them, but in prayer and in meditation you can say, gosh, I miss you a lot. I really would love to see you again. And you say that from the very depths of your being and from the soul. They'll come to you and they'll say, look, I'm doing fine. The baby will be growing, and you do grow on the other side always. And in some cases, children will become a guide for you, or they'll work with you and they'll help you out. And you'll say, you know, why did this have to happen? Well, that's another whole show, but usually it's because it's the right time to go, and it's pretty much prearranged before we're born. And I think before we're born, we're given a lot of information, and you also have free will. So it's the interlocking of maybe about 12 or 13% free will on the earth with another 80, 85% destined karma, or call it what you will, destiny. So when we cross over and there's so much grief, the greatest secret to healing is awareness and an understanding that we don't die. I mean, I'm so tired of saying to people, they're not in the grave. They are not in the grave, and they don't even hear me. So you have to be able to hear and to listen and to understand. I just say, fine, okay, go sit there. My father went to the cemetery every day after he lost my mother. And he brought flowers. Well, it's nice. But, you know, I said, Dad, this makes you so depressed. He says, yeah, you know, I kind of feel better. I said, no, you don't. You sit there crying. This, how can this make you feel better? Let's have some awareness. Mom's not in the grave. That's number one. And then he started having more communication with her once she got past that point of thinking that she's in the grave and understanding that God is good and the healing is there. And you ask in sincere prayer from the heart, say, I really would like to see you. And I know you say, well, you know, I've done that, and nothing ever happened. A lot of people say that to me. I say, well, you know, there are some things we just don't have answers to. You're doing everything right. You're being reverent. You're asking, excuse me, with sincerity in your heart, and it's not happening. So it's not the right condition. It's not the right time. And then all of a sudden it will happen. When the student is ready, the teacher appears, and all kinds of things will happen. So it's a matter of faith, it's a matter of dedication, it's a matter of caring, and a little bit of belief. And don't be so cynical. People are incredibly cynical, and they're holding on to old belief systems, like you go in the grave, you stay there, you know, you rot away. What kind of thing is that? God wouldn't do that to us. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I'm losing my voice. I'm sorry. Usually when that happens, the spirit wants to speak directly to you. It's like, no, not now.
Well, I get it. I think there is comfort in going for some people. I'm not a cemetery visitor myself.
Good.
You know,
good.
I just, death unnerves me too much, and it's not a sign of disrespect, but I feel better with the concept of who the person was in my heart and not sitting there staring at a rock with their name engraved on it. You know, I'm fascinated to go
That's
see celebrities.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to go see celebrities' gravestones simply just to say, wow, I was within 6 feet of, you know, in any way, shape or form. There's kind of an interest in a macabre fascination with that, but I'm not that kind of person myself, but I can understand why. But with that said, you know, my mother was cremated, and her urn sits in my living room directly behind our couch where we all sit as a family and watch TV and play games. So, I don't need to go to the cemetery. She's sitting right behind me at all times anyway, you know, with whatever physical remains there are. So there's that concept. But, I understand the desire of still wanting some kind of connection and feeling close to that form that you knew so well. So I understand, you know, that part of the grief process and the idea that we need to let go, and Lord knows I've tried, and you know, I had a great relationship with my mom. There's no unspoken word between us that was left. There was no, it's not like I need to know, you know, this or that, or where's the key to the safety deposit box. It's none of the other item, you know, things that I don't want to dismiss them as silly, but I mean, it's none of the silly items a lot of people want. I'm not looking
right.
for approval. I'm not looking for attaboys, you know, I mean, and that's not silly, but I mean, it's not, you know, I got that in life, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, and I tell my listeners, give all the attaboys and pats on the back you can to the people you love while they're alive so that they don't have to come looking for you in death, for that kind of contact, I guess. But with my mom, I said it all, but it doesn't stop the missing
pain.
And the ache.
Yeah,
and
the
you know, I mean, my grandfather has now been dead longer than I knew him. And it still feels like it was a month ago that he passed away, and it was 26, 27 years ago now. And
wow.
Right. But it's still there, that hollow feel, you know, you do learn to move on and go beyond, but you know, and this one with my mom is a newer, fresher wound. So it's still very prevalent with me as a lot of people are dealing with loss. That's recent. Getting over the grieving process sounds like, well, yeah, that's obvious. We just have to get over it. But to some of us, it's very hard to do. As much as I want, trust me, I would love to leave the grieving on the altar and walk away from it and just be left with happy thoughts. And I try to do that, but you can't beat the grief in a lot of cases. And I see people with that. And I don't think it's, you know, at least I hope it's not a mental deficiency that I can't let go of.
No.
You know, but I think, you know, a lot of it is, again, it's our desire to have. It's the overwhelming need or desire to keep some kind of contact. Because when people are alive, you have them here. And I think that's what we grieve is the ability to hear that voice and communicate and talk and exchange ideas and make each other laugh and make each other cry and make each other smile. And, you know, that is what we grieve. And, you know, I don't know anybody that sits there wallowing for their dead loved one of, oh, what are they going through? That poor soul. And, you know, that's not what grief is about. I think grief is about our dealing with our own loss and how do we move forward without that person anymore.
Okay, dealing with our own loss. Again, it comes down to a form of communication. Either, I mean, I'm not a big fan of all the medium shows on TV, like the medium, and there was this young lad, I don't know what his name was, on Lifetime TV, I believe, where you have that link, and people all cry because there's such a wonderful feeling of reconnection. It's exactly what you're looking for. So I would say do it yourself. Don't trust strangers unless you know who they really are, so it's not fraudulent communication. But just knowing that you can do it yourself is great. And I'm not plugging my book because I'm not even sure that it's even available, 7 Steps to Heaven. It goes through the process of telling you, you don't have to depend on a medium. You can do this yourself. And it leads you through the process of being able to communicate on your own, which is the best way to do it. Don't use Ouija boards, which I know everyone at a certain point in your life, you're going to love it. And they even have Ouija boards on the web, of all things, which I've gone to myself, by the way, to check it out. And Ouija boards were always so popular because it would bring in spirit and say, yes, I'm your mother. Here I am. And you know, we finally are communicating again. You always have to test the spirits. You say, well, really, what color is my car? And then they're gone. You don't know. Or when was I born? You know, test them and see if they actually have that knowledge, if they're the true spirits that they're, you know, pretending or seeming to be. There are things that are healing. Again, the most healing thing is that direct communication you have yourself, where they come to you in a dream, or they come to you when you're just relaxing at the beach and you're not thinking about anything. You'll have that communication. You'll suddenly say, you know, I heard from my father for the first time, or my grandfather. You know, so there's just a lot going on. There should be more. The ethers are thinning, you know.
Can we, and would you suggest trying to communicate with past versions of yourself? You know, reincarnation is so fascinating to me. The concept of connecting, I mean, if it's the same soul, that should still be part of me. Can we reawaken those memories on our own? Can we reawaken those connections? Or is it good to leave that in the past because, although that's part of our file cabinet, we should leave that file closed and just focus on the new chapter of life that we're living?
Excellent question. I believe, yes, you should concentrate on the life that you're living. And in most cases, if you go into hypnosis, you'll realize that you don't want to know about a lot of these past lives where you might have been burned at the stake or thrown into boiling oil and all of that. You know, it's like, it'll never happen again. If it happens once, it won't repeat itself. But you have to be very careful when you have past life regression, which is what you're asking about, Dave, right? Going back into past lives,
right,
and asking yourself, well, it has to be very controlled, and you have to do it very carefully. And the reason the veil comes down between lifetimes is that it's supposed to. It's for our protection. So each lifetime is fresh and new as much as it can be, without the trauma that would come from remembering so many of these past lives that were indeed very distressing. You might be able to remember some good things, but it's very difficult. So through the grace of God, we do not have that memory of past lives. Can you call on yourself? Can you call on your higher self? Absolutely. You're talking about the oversoul, the higher consciousness. Absolutely. You can say, I believe so many great teachers taught that concept.
Because like I would think if we could call, yeah, if we could call on our past selves to get answers about life and death, that would be much more powerful. Because it almost seems a waste that we live that entire existence and we're not allowed to take parts of that with us. We're not allowed to have learned from that in this lifetime. We're going to make the same mistakes and do things. It seems like maybe they are there to be tapped into. Maybe we should be accessing those memories and those experiences so that we can
learn and grow. Right. That's terrific.
And become more from it.
Okay. Okay. What we're dealing with now in each of these lifetimes, like the one we're having currently, is like the tip of the iceberg. It's just a little teeny tiny tip of the iceberg. All of that goes below. And that's why this is alpha, beta, theta, delta. We're mostly in the awake state, and you need to go down like a couple of levels down, theta, alpha, beta, theta. You have to go down usually to delta before you can tap into past lifetimes, and that's for a reason, because of what I just said, the trauma. But you don't want to do that necessarily unless it's something helpful. It has to be very controlled, and it can be dangerous too. So you have to
Why would it be dangerous to relive
part of
our life?
I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah.
Okay. My dad was a pharmacist at a mental institution on Long Island at Pilgrim State Hospital. And I was on the grounds frequently because he always forgot his lunch or a sweater or something. So I would go through the wards and I would familiarize myself with a lot of what was going on. I don't know if you know that all those institutions have closed, but I would actually be in there with the patients. And they, in many cases, had broken through what the Hindus call the Bindu, B-I-N-D-U, and they were mixing lives. They were dressing as Indians and dressing as, they allowed them to dress in period costumes of what they were actually experiencing, what they thought that they were, and it had caused a form of insanity, which is not a great answer to your question, but it's really a great answer. You understand that the Bindu, again, going back to Hindus, the Bindu is there for a reason. It's for our protection. You're saying, well, can't we tap into past lives so it would be helpful to us? Yes, you can, but it can't be done with drugs. I mean, a lot of people use certain kinds of drugs and herbs to relive past lives. Again, very dangerous because it mixes the lifetimes together, and not everyone can handle it. You're a very stable person. You could handle it. Most people cannot. So God is very kind to us in putting up that big wall that comes down when you take your first breath. It's going to be this lifetime. And Yogananda said, you can go into your past lives, but you better be pretty stable before you can do that. You better be ready for it, because you're going to dig up a lot of stuff you may not be ready for. So I don't know if that answered your question, but the wall is there for a reason. Did that answer? I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it does. I was just curious why you believe why are those parts of us not accessible anymore?
I'm sure our protection.
Okay.
They're horrendous in many cases, but they're also wonderful, and they're peaceful, and they're boring. You were a shepherd. Oh, so for 90 years you followed sheep around with a thing in your hand. You know, Would that help you? Maybe. Who cares? Is that going to help you? If it's going to help you, I assure you that God will show it to you. And you ask sincerely and say, you know, who? I wrote a book called Why Am I Here? You said I wrote 6 books. I actually already have 10 out in print. You have an old introduction, but I'm working on my 11th book.
I got it off your website.
Okay. You know, it's probably an old website. I don't even update my website. You know what? The last book was Why Am I Here? Which all of us wander around saying every single day, why am I here? So it gives you charts that you can look up. And I'm also an astrologer. And if you go to the part of the chart that is the north node, that's all the way over at the right of in the ephemeris, it tells you the purpose of your birth. I don't have an ephemeris with me, or I would tell you what yours is. But and it also tells the south node, which is what you did in your most recent incarnation. So astrology gives a lot of information about why we're here. And so I was very happy when that book came out. So I don't know if it's available, but it's around somewhere. That's why am I here. The most significant thing is that you meditate and pray every single day for that link. And service is the coin of spirit, is service. If you serve others with an open heart and you don't look for money, you don't put money first, you just do it because of the goodness of your heart. Now, as a radio person, Dave, I know that a lot of us work and it's absolutely free. We don't get paid to do our radio work. You're just out there delivering a message. That's beautiful service. That's beautiful. So it's that kind of service. It's going into senior citizen facilities and saying, what do these people really need? Hey, they've got bed sores. They need to be turned. You know, doing simple things like that, helping other people who need it. So I know that you know that's the case. And I know that you're hurting about your mother. And the most healing thing would be if you could feel her touch again, or if you could see her standing by the side of your bed, which she does. She stands by your bed all the time. And you could sense that yourself. You would be so healed, and you wouldn't have the grief that you're still experiencing. See, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. It's only 6 months. It's a very short time. So is that something helpful? I wanted to just go back to the death process again. Please. People need to know what happens. There's something called the panorama, which, again, in Defending Your Life, that wonderful movie, they didn't call it the panorama, but in esoteric terms, that's what it is. And it's a review of your life. And it's every single thing you ever did. Things like you picked up a nail off the ground. I mean, that's it. It's in there, everything. And it's usually shown pretty quickly, or it can be shown very slowly. And everything is in there. And you say, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I did that. Did I really hurt that person? You will feel their pain. You will experience what they have experienced, and you're given the opportunity to make it up to them. You're given a number of choices of what you can do. And the panorama is so essential, and no one really talks about it. It's reconnection with who and what you are and what you did and why you're here. So that's extremely important. And the most significant thing in a person's soul progression is forgiveness. If you're still holding on to any kind of animosity or lack of forgiveness, you ask God to help you get through this. Say, how can I, they did this terrible thing. How can I forgive? I'm never going to forgive them. Don't say that. You know, the forgiveness has to be there, because if you don't forgive them on this side of the veil, it's more difficult on the other side to forgive a person. You know, when you're in the physical body, forgiveness is extremely important. It's divine. And if you can forgive and forget, really essential. And that's for great soul progression. And so much goes on the other side. This is why, you know, I have the cemetery thing. I'm plagued by cemeteries. It's like, look at the light. Raise your head and look at the sky. Look at what we're actually talking about here. We're not talking about going down there. We're talking about elevation to higher consciousness and ascension, soul ascension, which I know, Dave, you know all about. So does this make any sense to you, or what are you feeling?
Well, it makes sense to a degree, but I mean, it's a lot of heady concepts, you know, the idea that these things take place, you know, hearing from Joyce Keller, who has seen and has had the ability to speak to the dead and get this information, you know, it's one thing to actually know it is true is another, right? So for you, it's a truth because you've heard it, you've spoken to the people that are going through it. For those of us on the outside, it's a concept we can understand and follow, but it's a hard concept to fully grasp because we don't have that direct connection that you do.
Well, you know, it's there for everybody, and you have to have the desire, and you have to have a certain degree of discipline also. You have to say, I will meditate at least 2 or 3 times a day. Pray first for the highest and the best to come in. You want only God consciousness. And they really, God has to respond. You'll hear one way or another. You know, a telephone to heaven really works, and you will get an answer, and you will have communication. So it doesn't have to be through me or through anybody. It's something everyone can do on their own. You can become very sophisticated and go the way of Dr. whatever his name is, with the psychomantium, and you go and you sit in the booth, and
Raymond Moody.
Can do that too. Yeah, with Dr. Moody and the psychomantium. You can do things like that that are very, they expedite the process. But how many people can have a psychomantium in their home? You know, it's like, I tried building one. And I said, here's my psychomantium. I hung all black curtains, and I put a little chair in there, a little tape recorder, and water. Water is essential because water is a great connector, and it also will help to purify the energy. Burn incense, a little smudge, you know, just give it a real shot. Don't just wander around saying, oh, I miss my mother. No, I'm not talking about you, Dave. I need that communication. Go through some steps that will actually help you.
Sure.
Excuse me. So if you haven't really gone through the process, you're not being fair to yourself. You're not giving it enough of a chance.
Okay. Well, that's
something. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Do you feel meditation and prayer are significant in attempts to communicate?
Like I said, the part I have a hard time with is, I don't want to reach out, and it's nothing religious. It's not, you know, don't reach out because, you know, the Bible says so. I feel like, you know, if they've had their point here, they've had their time. I shouldn't, you know, I should just let them be and let them heal and do what they need to do. So that to me is kind of the, you know, my concept of it and why I don't do it. I'm horrible at meditation. I've tried and tried and tried, and I cannot, I just can't connect. I can't shut off the chatter in my brain long enough to sit there and meditate for any period of time. If I listen to some of the, you know, meditation CDs that help me with relaxation or, you know, whatever, that's one thing. But, I can't get it to, I can't, you know, involve myself. And I know a lot of people are kind of in the same vein I am. They just can't get to that point.
Right. That's true of almost everyone, but you don't have to do that when you drive, or moments of relaxation are just as good as meditation. Because you're turning off, what did you say, the monkey mind that we all have. And you're tuning in just in a state of relaxation. That's probably why there's so many car accidents. Because people are driving, they're tired, they go into a state of delta. And, you know, they're starting to really have that receptivity. I find driving, especially a long drive where you're driving by yourself, to be very helpful. That will really bring in spirit activity very quickly. And you'll know that you're not alone.
That's the last time I want to be. I don't want to be in a car and have a spirit make itself known to me, or I'm going to be joining the other side really quickly.
Dave, it's not so much that they know that they make themselves known, is that you can hear. You will hear in your inner hearing and inside your head. You'll hear messages, or you'll know, or they'll say, slow down, or I miss you, I love you, and you're like that. It'll be an attunement. It won't be frightening. You're not going to suddenly have a materialization next to you, which would cause anyone to have a heart attack. But, you know, I mean, you're so naturally gifted yourself. you're on outgo mostly, and you're listening, and you're so much a communicator, and a number 22, an 1122, which is so extraordinary. I would think that meditation is impossible for you, which is fine. Your whole life is meditation. So that's beautiful.
Well, I don't know about that. Like I said, I don't know. I had two chaotic, seven kids and ex-wives and a partridge in a pear tree. I've got a lot going on. I don't know that I ever hit that Zen moment. Fascinating stuff. The book, Bridging the Gap, What Happens Before, During, and After Death, will be out later this year. We'll remind our listeners when it comes out. Joyce Keller, you can visit her website, joycekeller.com. And you also help people connect and do readings as well. So if they reach you through your website, they can book readings. Is that right?
And animals. You know, I have more requests for animals than people.
Really?
Well, no, it's about half and half. People love their animals, and the animals are so sweet and so innocent and precious. So, you know, I try to be helpful however I can be. And you do too, Dave, and I salute you for that.
Well, thank you very much. Joyce Keller, always a pleasure speaking with you. We'll be back again tomorrow.
You.
We've got more coming your way on the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.
Hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.